Next case is number 09-5024, M. Arapakis Carpentry against the United States. Ms. DeVittori.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Stephanie DeVittori. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, M. Arapakis Carpentry. As the Court's aware, the case involves a complicated contract dispute concerning M. Arapakis' construction work at a Navy site in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. We believe that the lower court erred in dismissing M. Arapakis' claim for lack of jurisdiction in the contract dispute.
But where was the claim certified?
Your Honor, I believe that the lower court erred when it found that the claim was required to be certified.
Isn't that the statute?
Section 605 requires certification, but I believe federal precedent, the Placeway Construction and Roxco decisions, find that where the government's asserting a right of set-off, which we believe in this case, the government withheld significant contract funds in order to set off its claim for liquidated damages, but the claim does not require certification. If one examines the Roxco decision, it was very similar. The contractor in that case defaulted, although that's not the case here, mid-performance, terminated, the surety completed the work, and then the contractor sought payment of amounts that it had performed. The government had assessed liquidated damages.
Is that decision cited in your brief?
No, Your Honor, it is not. It was considered by the lower court, which distinguished it, and we believe that the lower court...
You're arguing before us that statutory provision can be overridden by a case. Kind of important omission not to cite that case to us.
Your Honor, I apologize for that omission. I don't believe that... We're arguing that the statutory provision can be overruled, however, by a decision of the court. Instead, I think the argument is that when it requires claim certification under Section 605C1, that's required only for contractor claims, and believe that the Roxco decision would find the exact situation here, that where the government seeks to collect liquidated damages by offsetting the damages against the contract balance, that it's not a contractor claim that requires certification, but instead a government claim that would not require certification. The decisions regarding certification cited in the government's brief don't involve this issue of the distinction between government and contractor claim. Instead, they were all decisions wherein the contractor was seeking additional funds. There was no issue of set-off or consideration that it could have been a government claim. Similarly, the Sun Eagle decision that is cited by the government in its brief on this issue, the court held that the inquiry is who took the action. If it is the government that withheld the funds, forcing the contractor to file suit to recover them, then it is a government claim, not a contractor claim, which does not require certification. In addition, unless Your Honor has further questions, we also believe that the court erred in finding that it was not a claim itself. We believe the correspondence from the contractor did constitute a claim because it put the contracting officer on notice of the underlying dispute, the amount, and the basis. I don't think anybody in this case could disagree that the issue in this case was delay. All of the parties understood, all of long, that the issue was whether the contract was delayed as a result of the government action. M. Arapakis believes it was because of defects in the specifications and then site conditions, the discovery of lead paint. And we believe that the correspondence to the contracting officer throughout made that clear. They were contesting any assessment of liquidated damages. They didn't.
Where in the opinion of the court below is this mysterious case discussed?
Sir, the Roxco case?
What's the name of it? Rothko?
Roxco. It's discussed on page 31. I'm sorry, 32, Your Honor. 31 begins with Placeway, and then the court discusses Roxco on page 32.
31 of which? What?
Your Honor, 32.
Nomenclature.
32 of the Federal Claims Court's decision. Federal Claim Court found that it did not apply, and we think that determination was incorrect.
Well, you apologize to us, but really the apology should be to the client, because you're arguing a case you didn't argue in your brief. I know your name's not in the brief, but...
No, I've raised the argument in response to your question, and that the government's argument assertion in its brief that the certification was the main error. But if the court considers the lower court's decision about Roxco, it found that it was distinguishable. We think that this is incorrect, because in this case, the sole issue is delay.
Was there ever a request made to the contracting officer for a final decision?
Your Honor, we believe that under Mendenhall and the St. George decisions, which are referenced in our brief, that the July 22, 2002 letter was sufficient, because the contractor indicated in that letter that it was taking a contrary position to the government and specifically indicating that it did not agree with the assessment of liquidated damages.
Of course, that letter doesn't really specify what the claim is.
It doesn't specify the amount. That's true.
Isn't that a requirement?
Under a case law such as St. George and the Bantam Court, the requirement is that it put the government or the contracting officer on notice of the basis, and they're not necessarily a sum certain. In this case, the contracting officer was put on notice that the contractor disagreed with the assessment of liquidated damages.
But the problem is that it's not clear from this letter whether the request is for 107 days or whether it's a request for 345 days or some other number in between. It's just the letter specifically, the July 22nd letter specifically refers to a 107-day extension and then concludes with a general reference to, you know, the Navy's aware of delays.
Your Honor, and that's part of the government's argument. They maintain that MARPAC has changed its position throughout, and I'll submit that the various correspondents reference different number of days of delay. But throughout, they've argued that any assessment of liquidated damages is improper because all delays were with the responsibility of the contracting party. And if the government itself concedes in its June 28, 2002 letter, which is referenced in its brief, that the government was aware that Maropakis was challenging the assessment of all of the liquidated damages, the $303,000 figure. So I would submit that under the case law, which permits the court to consider extrinsic evidence, the ongoing discussions between all the parties, the fact that the 107 days is in the July 22nd letter is not fatal. The contracting officer was still aware of the basis for the claim, and it was not required to insert a sum certain. There is federal precedent to confirm that, and that would be the decisions such as Mendenhall, Bantam, that as long as the contracting officer is placed on knowledge, that the sum certain need not be included.
I found the discussion in the claims court opinion of Roxco. Court said, of course, that's a decision of the claims court, which isn't binding on us.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand.
Furthermore, court said the plaintiff's reliance on Roxco is similarly misplaced. That case involved issues of timeliness and waiver. That doctrine refers to the doctrine has no application in the present matter. Jurisdictional adequacy of the contractor's underlying claims was not at issue as it is in our case. So we'll look at Roxco, but the claims court didn't think it was very relevant.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would submit that that is not the case, that Roxco is directly on point, that where the claim is a set-off, that it is a government claim and not a contractor claim, which requires certification.
Okay, all right, let's hear from the other side.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Vittorio. Mr. Kiffner.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This court should affirm the trial court's decision because Maripaque has failed to submit a claim within the meaning of the Contract Disputes Act, and because the government was entitled to judgment as a matter of law with respect to its counterclaim for liquidated damages. It's important to note before the court here what Maripaque has argued before.
But you're saying that having filed the claim for liquidated damages, no defense to that claim can be permitted. Isn't that what you're telling us?
Well, the argument made in the trial court was that, according to Sun Eagle and Elgin Builders, that a contractor seeking to contest a liquidated damages assessment based upon entitlement to extensions of time is required to submit a claim. Here, however, in fact, in Maripaque's opposition to the government's summary judgment, they did not, in fact, defend against liquidated damages based upon their
They said the delay was due to the government. That's not a defense?
Well, they have asserted they've attempted to assert their own claim, which is what they've argued on appeal, that their July 22, 2002 letter was a claim.
A claim for the contract price, but we're talking about the claim for liquidated damages. You're saying that there's no way that they would be permitted to defend that claim unless they had filed a separate claim with the contracting officer for an extension, which would have, of course, it would have negated the claim for liquidated damages.
Well,
you're saying that's the only way that they could defend against this claim based on delay.
First, I would simply say that the court need not reach that issue because Maripaque did not argue it below. The trial court specifically found at page 49 of the joint appendix that Maripaque raised no genuine issues of material fact regarding the imposition of liquidated damages, and, quote, nor does the plaintiff rely on its earlier unsuccessful attempts to persuade the Navy to extend the contract.
There's no question of material fact in terms of the fact that it took longer to perform than was established in the contract, and that liquidated damages were included in the contract. But there certainly was a question as to responsibility for the delay.
That may be, but in fact that was not raised in opposition to the government's motion for summary judgment.
I'm not sure I understand. You're saying they never asserted that the delay was due to the government?
They did, but they attempted to do it based upon their own assertion of a claim. That is, they attempted to show that the government was responsible for the delays, but in doing so, they attempted to argue that it was an affirmative claim on their own behalf.
They wanted to be paid the contract price.
I'm sorry?
Of course, because they wanted to be paid the contract price.
Yes.
But you're saying that, therefore, there's no defense to the claim for liquidated damages?
Pursuant to the claims court decisions in Sun Eagle and Elgin,
But that's what's on appeal, is the claims court decision.
Well, the trial court relied upon those two decisions in holding that where a contractor asserts entitlement to extensions of time based upon delay, it is in fact required to file a claim with the contracting officer. But here, I have to emphasize that Maripaque has defended against the government's motion solely by relying upon the fact that the liquidated damages clause functioned as a penalty.
So you're saying there's a difference between an entitlement to an extension of time based on government-caused delay and government-caused delay as a defense?
I guess I am, but I would just again emphasize that...
That's a very curious position for the government to take, is it not? How in the world can contractors cope if such lines are to be drawn?
Well, in this particular case, the claim consistent with Sun Eagle and Elgin was that a term in the contract should be adjusted. That is, the completion date in the contract should be modified according to the delay asserted. That is an adjustment to a contract term, which would be a claim under the definition under the CDA.
That would have eliminated the liquidated damages claim. I agree. But you're saying they're not permitted to raise this defense unless they do it by requesting an extension of the term?
Yes, they need to come forward with a request. Although I would again emphasize that the court need not reach that issue if it is not inclined to agree with that rule.
It's a dispositive issue, is it not?
It is not.
If they're allowed to raise the defense, then it's irrelevant whether they also filed a claim with the contracting officer for an extension of time.
I believe that's true. But again, here, when defending against the imposition of liquidated damages, they did not raise the delays. They asserted
it was due to the government's delay. That's not raising the defense that it was due to the government's delay?
They raised the defense that liquidated damages clause was a penalty in response to the government's motion for summary judgment, not that the government's motion should be denied because we were entitled to extensions of time, notwithstanding the fact that we didn't submit a claim.
But isn't all this subordinate to the lack of a certified claim?
If the court finds that a claim is required, then it can agree fully with the trial court, and it doesn't matter what Maropagus may have done. That is, if it finds that the trial court was correct, that the July 22, 2002 letter, which is the only communication relied upon on appeal, does not constitute a claim because it, based upon the trial court's findings and because of lack of certification, then that's all the court need find us to affirm on this case. Yes.
So the government's position is that any defense to a government claim has to be presented as a certified claim to the contracting officer?
That is not our position, Your Honor. Pursuant to the decisions in Sun Eagle and Elgin, which the trial court relied upon.
What's your position in this case?
It's our position that Maropagus could have, as it did here, contest the imposition of liquidated damages by arguing, for example, that the clause was an improper penalty, or by arguing that there, in fact, was no delay, that the clause was not applicable because there was no delay. But that is different than an adjustment of the contract terms, which is what Maropagus sought in this case, or what Maropagus claims in this case, not what it defended the government's motion for summary judgment based upon.
So the government's position is that if we accept that this was an error in pleading, that ends their claim or their defense?
And yes. I mean, they would have waived the ability to defend. I mean, what they're arguing is that we should have been entitled to present evidence of delay, regardless of whether we filed a claim or not, because this is a government counterclaim.
Because it's
but they
defense.
Didn't do that in the trial court. They did not actually raise those issues in response to the government's motion in the trial court.
They didn't get to it.
Because they had argued before the trial court at first that they had, in fact, their own claim. And they essentially circled around at the end and said, well, this actually isn't our claim. It's a government claim. And they attempted to argue based upon Placeway and Roxco that this was, in fact, nothing more than a government counterclaim. And was a challenge from that, by them to it.
What is the relevance of Roxco?
I'm not sure that it is relevant, given the way it was distinguished by the trial court. And Placeway is similarly distinguishable. We do not contest that there is jurisdiction to. We do not contest that there's jurisdiction over the government's counterclaim for liquidated damages. Nor do we contest that Maropagus could challenge or defend against that imposition based upon either the imposition by either the fact that the clause functions as a penalty or because it was inapplicable. Whether Maropagus may defend against it based upon its entitlement to extensions of time is simply not an issue that is before this court because they didn't attempt to do so in the trial court. And that is our position here. With respect to the letter, the July 22, 2002 letter, Maropagus relies only upon this communication. The trial court, viewing the totality of the circumstances, found that this letter did not suffice to constitute a claim for several reasons. First, because it had abandoned prior requests for extensions. It had abandoned essentially four of the five grounds that had been asserted just a year earlier. It did not state a request for a final decision. It did not provide a sum certain. And it was part of ongoing negotiations. That is, in July of 2002, when the letter was sent, the parties were still engaged in a back and forth, which is embodied in a later October 2002 meeting in which they ultimately discussed this issue. A claim, as the trial court noted, represents an impasse in negotiations, a point at which the contractor must decide that it can no longer negotiate with the government and that it must then focus its attention on complying with the CDA for purposes of pursuing its claim. And finally, Maropagus raises an argument regarding the jurisdiction of this court, and I'm sorry, of the Court of Federal Claims, and that it should be susceptible to equitable considerations. But, of course, the Court of Federal Claims and the waiver of sovereign immunity embodied in both the Tucker Act and in the CDA are not amenable to equitable considerations and therefore should be ignored on appeal here.
Is that accurate, at least if you look at the history of the Court of Claims? Equitable adjustments was something that they constantly did, and as a result, they were deemed a fair and just arbiter of disputes between the government and its contractors. You're saying no more equity?
No, I'm simply saying that for the purposes of compliance with the CDA, equitable considerations, which they have raised in their brief, such as, well, we might not have technically complied with the CDA, but we did, the contractor should have known, or the government was
the potentially... The CDA is the basis of much or most, perhaps all, of the claims against the government. I just want to be sure I understand the government's position is that the court can no longer consider equity.
The court must still look to the requirements of the CDA, and that the a failure to comply with the requirements of the CDA, whether it's filing a claim or seeking or obtaining proper certification on that claim, necessitates dismissal of the action.
So you are saying that equitable adjustments are not available?
I'm saying that equitable considerations can't relax the jurisdictional, the already existing jurisdictional limitations placed on the court.
This isn't a question of jurisdiction, isn't it? Is it? You're saying that they lose because they didn't file a claim with a contracting officer. I don't think that's a matter of jurisdiction.
If there was no claim filed, there would in fact be no jurisdiction in the Court of Federal Claims over that action. I mean, in a hypothetical situation, in a Contract Disputes Act case, if a plaintiff comes into court without either submitting a claim or obtaining a final decision, the court has no jurisdiction.
Okay, so I just want to be sure I understand the government's position. They're not permitted to raise delay as a defense. They had to file it with a contracting officer. Having failed to file it with a contracting officer, they're now barred from raising it as a defense, and the court is precluded from considering the equities.
The government's argument is that if, to the extent the plaintiff makes an affirmative claim to adjust terms of the contract, that is a claim that requires compliance with the CDA. Now, if the court accepts the appellant's placeway characterization of this and that this is nothing more than a government counterclaim, the issue of whether Maropaikis may still, despite the fact that it did not file a claim or receive a final decision, may still defend upon those alleged delays is not before this court because it was not argued below. They did not argue that notwithstanding our failure to file a claim or submit a claim and certify it, we can still defend. They did not argue that. They argued only that the clause functioned as an improper liquidated or as an improper penalty, and that equitable considerations regarding the whether a claim need be filed or what the government may or may not have known is simply does not displace the jurisdictional limitations of the court.
You said that the contractor was arguing that the liquidated damages was an improper penalty.
Yes.
The opinion of the Court of Federal Claims says that plaintiff seeks damages resulting from the Navy's denial of Maropaikis' request to extend the time for completion of a contract project, a construction project. It sounds to me like the Court of Federal Claims thought that the claim was damages from the denial of the request to extend the time of the contract. That seems to be different from what you're arguing, that they're just challenging the liquidated damages as an improper penalty.
Well, they did assert, based upon their belief that they had submitted a claim, and they did assert that Maropaikis should have been entitled to various delays, various extensions based upon delay.
So they were presenting a claim for an extension of the contract terms based on the various delays that they attributed to the government.
Yes, their complaint does that, yes. But in response to the government's motion for summary judgment, they did not raise those issues. They raised only the idea that the clause functioned as a penalty. The trial court made that finding. It's at page 49 of the joint appendix. specifically states that the plaintiff does not rely upon its prior request for extensions of time in response to the government's motion for summary judgment.
So you're not saying that they didn't assert a claim for an extension of the time for the contract. You're saying that they both asserted a claim for an extension of time and defended the government's claim for liquidated damages, and with respect to the government's claim, they simply asserted that that was an improper penalty and didn't assert the contract delays as a defense to that.
Yes.
To that claim.
I believe that's correct, yes.
Okay, any more questions?
No further questions.
No questions.
We would respectfully request that the court affirm the trial court in all.
Thank you, Mr. Kiffner. Mr. Vittori.
Very briefly, Your Honors. I would like to respond first. I believe Judge Lynn may have covered it, but the lower court, in describing the pleadings in this case, acknowledged that Maracapas had filed the complaint, the government answered, and then asserted a counterclaim for the liquidated damage, actually counterclaim for an additional $60,000, which was the amount of the assessed liquidated damages above and beyond the contract retainage. The court pointed out that in its answer to the government's counterclaim, Maracapas specifically denied that it was responsible because any failure to perform was the result of the government, not of its own. In this case, the record below, clearly from the trial court's opinion, is replete with evidence that the cause of the delay was the government, not Maracapas. That's our position. Obviously, the government respectfully disagrees. So I think that to argue that the court cannot consider evidence of delay as a defense to the government's claim for liquidated damages is without any merit and, frankly, an issue of semantics that shouldn't be considered. Secondly, I'd like to address Judge Newman's discussion concerning equitable principles. While we believe that the trial court should be reversed based on the reasons I previously argued, we'd also urge the court to consider equity. In response, counsel's indicated that the court cannot, and in its brief it cites two cases, a Minnesota case and a Hercules decision are the titles. And I'd point out that neither of these cases involve construction, contract disputes act in any way, shape, or form. These are cases that are wholly unrelated. The one case involves a request under fairness and equity grounds to impose automatic indemnification against the government when government contractors produce poisonous substances such as Agent Orange. That's not the case here. We're not asking the court to overrule statutory language and impose automatic indemnification. And we would submit that equity in this case would provide a basis for overruling the lower court. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Vittori. Thank you, Mr. Kiffner. The case is taken under submission.